Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, very happy to say that we have Ian Madigan of Ulster with us on the line in the midst of a very busy time. Obviously, Pro 14 final just gone at the weekend, and then Toulouse away on a Sunday in the Heineken Champions Cup quarter final. That's a game we have live commentary of, by the way, for you on Sunday. Leinster play Saracens on the Saturday. Ian, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Joe. Oh, how are you? Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure. Big fan of the show.
No, it's great to have you on. I do remember the last time we spoke, it was in the middle of March, and there was a real sense of trepidation and fear, probably, and worry about the unknown. We were right at the beginning of this whole thing. How has this rather strange year been for you?
Obviously, it's had its challenges. But it also presented a big opportunity for me with the lockdown, you know. At the time of the lockdown, you know, I probably wasn't enjoying, you know, my rugby as much as I had previously. Wasn't getting as much game time as I would have liked. So to be honest with you, when the lockdown happened, like I wasn't devastated. It wasn't like I was, you know, John Cooney in the form of my life, and you know, the lockdown came at a bad time. You know, they kind of allowed me time to think about my game and you know, the areas that I wanted to work on, and gave me an opportunity to, I suppose, iron out, you know, any injuries I had and really push myself physically to get back into, you know, the best shape physically I wanted to be in to be able to play the game at a high level. And I was very lucky. I had Brian Byrne living with me at the time, and we were able to just kind of knuckle down and get some good training done. And, you know, it stood me in good stead, which is great.
So when you think about your game, when you sit down and do a brutal, honest assessment of where you are, give us what was good, what was bad, what did you need to work on?
I tried to think back to, like, previously, like, what had worked well for me and, you know, being able to play at the game line and, you know, having, you know, a good footwork game and, you know, even just having, like, top-end speed. And I think, you know, I had a look at myself, and if I was honest, I probably wasn't as fast as I, you know, wanted to be. And I certainly wasn't cutting and sidestepping as well as I had previously. And I think that can be, you know, a buildup of, you know, just training over the years and you know, different injuries you might have picked up, you can kind of become a bit more cautious. So, you know, I worked closely with the, you know, strength conditioners and physios, and you know, tied in with getting stronger and faster, it was kind of dampening down my neural system, which was probably holding me back a bit. And I think as well, when you're training, you know, in ones and twos, you can go really hard. And if you're not feeling it the following day, it's not the end of the world. Whereas if you're training with a team and you push yourself too hard and you've got to train again the following day, you know, it can be more challenging in that sense. You know, you can almost be holding yourself back, you know, a few percent when you're training in a team environment, because you know you're concerned about training the following day or a game at the weekend. Whereas with the lockdown, you know, it was, you know, a three or four month break that you could really push yourself hard, and there was no consequences if you stepped too far, which was something I really enjoyed.
Yeah, there's a certain novelty to that. So have you actually managed to increase your speed? Is that something that you would measure, or is it more of an attitude thing when you're on the pitch?
We were lucky when I was in Bristol, like, they were very organized at the start of the lockdown. They, you know, divided up all the gym gear. Was able to order in some, and I was lucky, like, we had a good setup in the house I was in. Like, we had a garage that we could set it up in a courtyard to use it. And even, like, they handed out all the GPS units, so, like, we could do our sessions remotely, and then we could actually basically download the data onto our laptop and then send it off, so you could get, like, everything from, you know, how many accelerations, decelerations, your top speed, total distance covered, all that kind of data.
Yeah.
So I was able to see each week, you know, my speed score was getting better. So it was good for me knowing that, you know, the strength work I was doing around it was working, and the speed sessions I was doing was working. So, yeah, like you can measure, but I think as well, you know how you're moving, you know, deep down. So it was nice just kind of having that spring my step after, you know, kind of 6 weeks or 2 months of doing it.
Ulster to date then, correct me if I'm wrong here, but give or take, I make it 27 minutes from the bench against Connacht. Ulster lost that match. You started against Leinster, played 63 minutes. Leinster won that match as well. 10 minutes from the bench against Edinburgh with the kick at the end. Obviously an amazing moment I want to talk to you a little bit about. And then off the bench in the Pro 14 final against Leinster. So all in all, give us the kind of overall sense of how you're feeling about all that thus far.
Yeah, like there's been positives and negatives. Like starting off with the Connacht game, you know, I've come off the bench there and, you know, I was happy with how I was training in the lead up to the game. You know, the kind of 6 week block we'd had in preseason had gone well, like both for me personally and I was very impressed with how the team was training. You know, but the reality was I hadn't played a whole lot in the previous 12 months, but I still was hoping that the team was going to go really well and I was going to go well personally. And I came on and kind of forced things a bit and didn't have a particularly good game. And I was very frustrated on a personal level and a team level after that one. But, you know, it was great, you know, the way sport presents opportunities. And I got a start the following week against Leinster. And while the result of that game wasn't great, the scoreboard didn't really reflect how the game went. You know, it was a pretty tight game. And, you know, if John's try is given at the end, it ends up being a one-score game, whereas, you know, they go down and get an 8 score, which kind of tarnishes the performance. But I actually thought, you know, we played well as a team in the game. And, on a personal note, I felt very comfortable out there, which gave me real confidence, you know, because you do build up doubt in yourself, you know, and you haven't played a whole lot for a period of time. You know, you do begin to question, you know, do I still have it? Like, you know, and what was good about that game, while there wasn't a huge amount on the line, it being a bit of a dead rubber, it was still a very competitive inter-pro game. And I felt on the pace and, you know, I thought my skills and my movement and stuff were up to it. So it was nice. Like, I remember getting on the bus on the way home and driving up to Belfast and just having a real kind of buzz, even though we'd lost the game. I personally felt, look, that was a good step forward for me in the overall scheme of things. And it was definitely a step forward for the team as well. Like, we took a lot of confidence from that game going into the semi-final.
I heard I'm wary of doing anything to affect anyone's confidence, but I'll put it to you anyway, and feel free to shoot the messenger and give me a dirty look and we can move on, you know. So do you read much or listen to much about, you know, of analysis of games you're involved in as a rule?
I try not to, like, okay. You know, and obviously when things are going well, you know, your stuff's going to get sent to you. You know, my mum would send me stuff. Oh, there was a lovely article in here, and she sent me on WhatsApp. Like, it's very, very hard to avoid it.
If you want to
go down that route of, you know, reading the good stuff, when the bad stuff comes, like, you know, I'm sure, you know, you're going to get online, you're going to look at Twitter, and that's when it's like negative and it can have a negative effect. So, like, over time, I have tried to not get too high when things go well and not get too low. And like, reading papers and listening to podcasts is definitely tied into that.
Yeah.
But look, I think I found a reasonably happy balance. So I do read some stuff and listen to certain podcasts or whatever. And, you know, I'm at the stage now as well. Like, if someone's giving their opinion and it's negative of me, it's not going to bother me too much, whereas as a younger player it would have
yeah,
hurt
sure.
me a bit, you know.
Well, to be fair, I mean, this was a point made about you I heard, which I wanted to get your thoughts on more than anything, and it was couched in the midst of what a really good impact you made overall and how quickly it settled, so it was far from an overall damning verdict. But one pundit was wondering if you were playing too deep in that Leinster match, if you were taking the ball too far away from the gain line, And what you jogged it in my memory when you said there, when you were assessing your game, you were wondering, am I playing enough on the gain line? So what's your kind of thoughts on that, or your response to that? But, you know, I don't know what even Dan McFarlane's asking you to do on a given night.
Yeah. No, look, I think that that analysis was actually spot on.
Right.
You know, I look back at the game and I was looking at it going, geez, I was pretty deep in certain situations. But at the same time, like, I have been working with Dwayne Peel in kind of varying the depth that I'm coming onto the ball. So, like, you know, when things were clicking for me, you know, in previous years with Leinster, I was able to play right on the gain line, and it was a good asset of mine because I could fix the internal defenders, get the ball through my hands quickly, and give guys outside me space. But the way defenses have evolved over the years, like over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 years, you've got, you know, outside centres, wingers, fullbacks closing, and they're not doing the same thing every time. So, like, sometimes they'll shoot up on the outside, sometimes they'll hold back, sometimes they'll appear like they're shooting, and then they'll actually back off. Like, that's something that Gary Ringrose does very well. He's very, you know, he's an intercept threat. He's a threat to come and tackle high, but he's also a threat to show like he's going high and then drop back, which, you know, influences the defender to either throw the ball early, force them to dummy and carry back inside. You know, so there's just much more changing pictures than there would have been, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So what I've been basically working on is varying the depth and the speed that I'm coming onto the ball.
Mm.
So there is still a time when catch flat, play, you know, play the ball quickly through your hands. There's also another time when you catch it a bit deeper, you take the ball onto the line and you're passing on the run. And that's, you know, something that, you know, that we've been working on in training. And I felt some parts of in that Leinster game in the regular season were good, but there was definitely some phases of play that I was looking at and going, geez, I'm way too deep there.
Right.
So it's a continued work on for me. It's something that I've really enjoyed doing with Peely. It's one of the first time the coaches has kind of brought it up to me, and, you know, how to use that variation to influence defences. And even during the lockdown, like, he was getting clips up of the Super Rugby and showing, you know, different out halves that do really well, and then other ones that are a bit more predictable. And it kind of, the penny was starting to drop with me then, and then it was great to get it into action physically in training.
Okay.
Hopefully it comes good in games.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. You know, the level of sophistication and the mind games almost going on, defences varying what they do and sometimes pretending to do one thing and doing another. So if you play at the same depth the whole time, then you will be utterly predictable. So you have to try and mix it up here and there. So maybe sometimes you are too deep, but it's part of a wider thought process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think as well, like, there's so many moving parts in rugby. Like, so, you know, it's easy to get flat. Like, if I've got Marcel inside me on a carry and he's, you know, run over two people, for the next phase, it's really easy for me to play right on the gain line, really flat with the defense backpedaling.
Yes.
And, you know, loads of guys and loads of guys around me.
Mm.
Less positive when, you know, the person has got hit hard, double tackle, the ruck ball's really slow, their defensive line is set really strong. Like, you're an idiot if you're looking to play flat there, because you're just going to get smashed again. Mm. You know, it's kind of slow to fast that you need to have. Like, if the defense is set really well and you're still looking to play the passing game, you need to be running onto the ball with serious momentum to try and get yourself, you know, back over the game line and regain momentum. So I suppose it's just being able to vary, you know, the different moving parts that are going on with your team, but also defensively what's also happening.
Okay, it's fascinating to get that kind of insight. If you're, I suspect your mum sent you about 354 different articles on the Edinburgh game then, did she?
She enjoyed a few of them, all right. She thought the days of the Edinburgh were gone, but they're not.
So that's a great moment. Give us your memory of it when the whistle goes and you know that you're going to have this penalty kick. Are these moments that you know, there's a nervousness about, or you've trained yourself to embrace, or you always loved even as a kid and you think this is my chance to be a hero? Because you can look at that moment in two ways, obviously. This is a chance to do something brilliant, or this is a chance to miss, and this is what everybody's talking about the next day. So how do you embrace or not embrace or deal with a moment like that when the whistle blows for the penalty?
Yeah, like, it kind of comes on you quite quickly. Like, obviously, there was a scrum awarded initially, and then it was escalated to a penalty. So, like, that took up a couple of seconds. But then very quickly, like, this kind of eeriness almost sets in. Like other guys in your team won't even give you eye contact. Like, they know it's a big moment. Mm. And, yeah, look, you dial into the technique that works for you and the system that works for you. And, you know, I've been lucky over the years that I do practice simulating that kind of high pressure situation, even if it's just, you know, a competition for a coffee with the other kicker. Mm. Whoever loses has to get the coffee. You're simulating, you know, high pressure situations. You don't want to lose because you're going to have to bring in the coffee the next day. Everyone's going to be slagging in the dressing room. You just don't want it. And it feels just as much on the line like a big kick to win a game is. It's the same emotions going through your system and your body's under pressure. Can you still execute under that pressure? And if you can do it in training, there's a good chance you'll be able to carry it through into games. So yeah, look, I knew it was going to be right on my range. And yeah, just basically stuck to my process. Use my breath to kind of calm me down. And then kicked it, and it was arcing in, and I wasn't sure if it was definitely going to arc in enough, and if it definitely had the legs. So you're just praying that it goes over, and then that just relief when the flags went up was just incredible, because obviously it would have been a tough few months, and you know, when you get rewarded with something like that, like, sport's brutal, like, it rarely gives you those kind of rewards, but when they come, it was just a feeling of elation. So. Look, it was a sweet one and nice way to start off in a new club.
I know, it was amazing. And it's so rare, it's the last kick of the game. I mean, it's like scoring in a penalty shootout kind of thing. And, you know, it's the pile on and it's just, you know, I get the impression you've settled very well there anyway, but it really must copper fasten that kind of, you know, have that moment with the team. I read a quote, you said, Al O'Connor, your captain, told you he loved you right before the kick. I love this. So, did he literally just say, Madigan, I love you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was funny because I actually kind of chuckled at it, and then like the coach came in, he'd heard it, and yeah, we've had a good laugh about it since. Like, you know, I only knew him a few weeks, and he's professing his love for me. But look, it was actually kind of settling me in a weird way. It was, you know, it would have been worse if someone comes up to you and starts going, "You've got this kick," or something like that. You don't necessarily need that at the time. You know, that's not really going to help you. But like something that could calm you like that, you know, I'm not saying if he does it again, it'll work, but it worked at the time.
Well, look, he has to keep doing it now until you miss. I mean, maybe that's just the way it goes. But it is, I can see how it's a nice thing. You're in a new environment. It's a really big moment. There's a, you know, there's just an, it's a kind of clever, it's a jokey thing, but it's also a nice thing to do to someone, you know?
Yeah, I know. Look, and even like, for me personally, you know, kick going over like that, like as an out half in the club, you're new, you know, I'm talking quite a lot in training sessions and in the lead up to games. And, you know, guys are still looking at me kind of going, what's this guy about?
Sure.
And you need to be producing games to kind of have this credibility. Like, and, you know, a simple thing as a kick like that going over can give you more credibility to then, you know, what you're saying counts a bit more. Mm. Whereas if you're the guy who's talking all the time, but you're not producing, you know, your words wear thin pretty quickly with people. So it was a big relief for me with that, like just to kind of feel like I contributed. And I also felt a bit of a weight as well. Like I didn't have a whole lot to do with the team getting into the semi-final. And you're taking spots of guys who've, you know, grounded out 20-odd games in the regular season. You're representing them. Mm. You know, it was nice to kind of feel like you'd done them justice, you know.
How have you settled generally in the dressing room and around Belfast?
Yeah, good. love Belfast, great city. People here are really friendly and stuff. And it was easy, like, obviously going to Bordeaux, I wouldn't have known too many lads over there, learning a new language. Like, it's pretty unsettling and takes a bit of time, even just getting used to, like, the strength conditioning and the different trainings and stuff. And, you know, it was similar but different in Bristol. I didn't know too many of the guys. So it just took a bit of time to kind of settle in and kind of figure out how they were playing and that kind of thing. But with the move to Ulster, like the system we're playing, I'm familiar with, like that 1-3-3-1, how JP won defending. You know, I'd have a good idea of, you know, what he expects of his defenders and work rate and systems and stuff like that. And then obviously with the players, like I'd played with a good few of them. I definitely trained with a good few of them and I'd played against a lot of them. And, you know, I knew Dan previously from the under-20s, you know, played with JP. So, like, literally after, like, a week, I felt like I'd settled in really quickly. And it's nice, like, it's a pretty good age profile of the squad. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys coming through who are mid-20s, really keen to learn, and just good atmosphere around the squad. And, you know, just really enjoy being part of it. And, yeah.
A trip to Toulouse this weekend is obviously one of the glamour ties, knockout rugby. When do you find out who's starting? And, you know, there's always that kind of question mark, I guess, hanging over the week when you're a player and you know, you'd love to start, and obviously Billy Burns is there as well. How does all that work? Have you got into a rhythm of when finding out who plays and when?
Yes, sometimes they do it, like, right at the start of the week. And then, like, other times they can wait a bit. Like, sometimes they'll wait. So, like, if it's a Saturday game, sometimes they'll wait until the Thursday. Just because, like, they could have guys carrying injuries and they're, you know, they don't want to name a team and then have a few, like, have guys disappointed and then have a few changes and then the disappointed guys are back in, and it's kind of affected their preparation.
Sure.
Yeah, Joe Schmidt used to always kind of manage that. Like, sometimes he'd do it right at the start of the week, and other times he'd just do it because he'd want to keep guys on their toes. Like, you know, if you announce the team on a Monday, are the guys that aren't picked going to train the house down on the Tuesday? Maybe, maybe not. Mm. You know, you might lose a few guys with disappointment. They also might come out with a point to prove and train the house down. But yeah, I think just changing it up. Like, personally, as a player, I like getting the information early. Mm. Just find it helps my preparation. You know, if you're picked to start or come off the bench, it just focuses your mind. And I think as well, like, just dealing with that disappointment, like, just give the information early in the week. Mm. Guys will get over it quickly. If you're getting it closer to game time, it can still really sting.
Yes.
So obviously we're off the back of a loss in a final. So yeah, we're just letting that settle, I suppose, and then we'll gear up as the week goes on.
I guess the games are coming so thick and fast at the moment. You know, I mean, the final would have been a huge focus last week, and now suddenly you've got Toulouse away. Quarterfinal doesn't get much bigger than that. I mean, there's probably not a huge amount you can do on your feet on the training ground, not least when you're travelling over to France as well. I guess a Sunday kickoff helps, but, you know, in terms of what you can actually muster up that's new, there's not very much. It's just about getting in the right headspace as much as anything.
Yeah, what's weird about this quarterfinal, like, the thing is, when the quarterfinal comes in a regular season, it's your biggest game of the season. Mm. Because, you know, that's the stage of the season you're at. You know, you've played maybe, I don't know, 15 league games. But the quarterfinal is your biggest game. And the gear up for that is just phenomenal. You know, it's a huge game for the club. Now, I'm not saying it's not a huge game for the club now, but it just has a slightly different feeling because last week was the biggest game of the season. And it's just kind of managing coming down off that, because you wouldn't usually have that in you know, leading into a quarterfinal. Mm. And then just trying to get the boys back up and realizing that, look, we're, you know, still in a great position in the Heineken Cup to, you know, make a semi-final and, you know, go on and hopefully win it, you know. So yeah, it definitely has been a challenge, you know, both for, like, the leadership group and in the squad and the coaches, just to lift everyone back up. And I think even just it's tough when you lose a final by, you know, 20 points. You know, it's,
yeah,
you're kind of not you're going to question, you know, what's it going to take? And that's only natural.
Mm. As I was just reading, by the way, I think you'll have 5,000 fans in the stadium on Sunday. That'll be something novel.
Yeah.
So,
It's good to see, like, you know, hope that goes well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got the game live, so we'll be keeping a close eye on it, to say the least. Ian Madigan, always great to check in. Keep it going, and best of luck at the weekend.
Cheers, Joe. Always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thanks a million. That is Ian Madigan, and like I said, Ulster play Toulouse on Sunday quarterfinal. We'll have the game live for you here on Off the Ball.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.